a show highlighting the diverse landscape of businesses in the Niagara region. Niagara Made with Ruth Unruh, News Talk 610 CKTB.
Welcome to Niagara Made on 610 CKTB. I'm your host, Ruth Unruh, and today I'm talking to Oksana Fisher, who is the CEO from Niagara Children's Center. Welcome, Oksana.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to have you back. For our listeners, and Oksana, we talked before about 2 years ago, and we were right in the middle, well, I guess even closer to the beginning of the lockdowns and the pandemic. But it's great to have you here again for us to get an update on some of the things that you're doing there at the Niagara Children's Center. But before we get into that, let's just refresh our listeners a bit. Can you tell us about the history of the Niagara Children's Center and the organization?
Sure. So just in terms of who we are today, Niagara Children's Center is a multi-service organization. We have lots of services and we support children who present either with physical, developmental, or communication delays or disabilities. So that's who we are now. Our history actually goes back to the 1950s, where so some salient points around our history are service clubs, physicians, and children with disabilities. So the Maycourt Club of St. Catharines, which is a service club of women, started to run a play group for respite for children, for families of children who had cerebral palsy. And that's really the origins of how we started to grow. We weren't officially Niagara Children's Center then, but that sort of grew in that St. Catharines General provided space in the hospital for this group to operate because many of the women in the club had connections to the hospital. Many of them, their spouses were surgeons or physicians. So what then evolved was like a cerebral palsy clinic at St. Catharines General Hospital. And Dr. William Orr was very instrumental in supporting that. And the needs started to grow in beyond just respite and recognizing that these children required therapy services and in their local community. So within this clinic, speech therapy started to be provided and physiotherapy. And then really just the recognition of there are many children in Niagara who have needs. And let's start to build something in Niagara for Niagara's children and families. So, again, service clubs were really key. The Maycourt Club, the Rotary Clubs of Niagara Falls, St. Catharines, Welland, the Port Colborne Lions Club, firefighters associations came together and became the sponsoring organizations of a new organization, which at that time was called the Niagara Peninsula Crippled Children's Center. So even the language of the center really speaks to the history. So we formally incorporated in 65, huge capital campaign running through the 1960s. And this community across Niagara raised over $400,000 to build what is still our building at the top of Glenridge Hill beside Hotel Du Chavrin across from Brock. And that building was built in 1969. And we have continued to grow and evolve and serve more children and of different needs. So what started as a center serving children with physical disabilities now serves a wide range of children presenting with different needs, speech and language, developmental, autism, physical disabilities, genetic conditions. So our history is very much important to us because we came together because of community. Community partners came together, but really we have grown and evolved, but are very much integral to this community and the families we serve.
It was very visionary, I guess, at the time too, right? To create something like this. And you're talking about $400,000, which is a lot of money in the 1960s. How many children were you designed to serve at that time? And how has that, I mean, you're saying that your scope of services too has expanded, right? But I imagine you've had to expand the building and, because it wouldn't have been designed for that many children.
Correct. So in October of 69, when that building opened, we had 35 students in our school and 55 what were called outpatients at the time. So now we are serving over 5,000 children per year. And the school has operating, I think, with about 60 seats in their classrooms. So we went from, I think, 5 employees. We now have 130 employees. So really just speaking to the scope. And you're quite right. The footprint of the building also grew through, I think, 3 different capital expansions as well. So definitely we have grown, evolved, and we're very much kind of supporting children and families across Niagara with their needs.
Can you tell us about some of the programs and services that you like specific to? Because now, you know, I know that you do some work with autism and you mentioned speech and hearing and that sort of thing. But can you tell us about some of the newer things that you're doing, what you're seeing? Are there patterns and trends in terms of diagnoses and that sort of thing?
For sure. So our core services are speech therapy, physiotherapy, and occupational therapy. So for children who are come to our center and start to receive services, they have one or all of those needs. So that's kind of the reason they're coming. So just to differentiate, we aren't Niagara's Children's Mental Health Agency. That's Pasto Mental Health. But sometimes families come through our door and we definitely redirect them to other organizations as well. So through those sort of core disciplines, we also wrap other services around social work services, which are really, really important for families because many of them are going through a journey where maybe the child, has significant needs, but the family then also has support needs for adjusting and coping and just kind of finding their new normal from that perspective. So social work is really important. Recreation therapy is another program that we have. And again, so as children get older, very much what we want to focus on is really supporting these children and their families in community participation. So rec therapy is one of those areas of how do we get children being able to engage in community programs, recreational programs, social programs, arts and culture programs. So we have a rec therapist who works with the children and families to say, what are their interests? What are their strengths? And how do we support those environments or adjust those environments so those children can participate fully? So that's really important, particularly as children hit school age, because we want them with their peers and their families from that perspective. We also have behavioral consultation services, again, because helping families and the children sort of address behaviors that might then be impacting how they're coping in school. And then we have a number of specialty clinics. So we have some medical clinics here right on site. So the families can come here, see their specialty physician, and wrap our therapy services as part of that appointment. So families aren't experiencing this sort of disconnect of services. We have specialized clinics for children who have special wheelchair requirements. And a technology clinic that helps children use technology to communicate, because not all children will communicate verbally. So there's incredible technology that, you know, we can modify iPads for children so that they can express their desires and wants and be able to communicate that within their classrooms and within their families and with their friendships. So lots and lots of services. And it's very individualized. So not every child receives the same sort of services, because it depends on what's important to that child and family at the time.
Right. I guess it's not okay to just say, well, this is what the diagnosis is for these 5 kids. So therefore, we're going to develop, a program that takes care of all of them, because each one of those within that would be varying levels of whatever the diagnosis is, and then the needs, right? Based and the family as well.
Yeah. So our core philosophy is what's referred to as family-centered care. So, when families enter through our doors, it's not that we take the child into a room and the family sits in the waiting area. The family is very much part of the team. And the family is part of that discussion around what is important to you at this time. What are the skills that you want your child to develop because you can't work on everything all at once. So, you know, for some families, they might say, I want my child to be able to start to dress more independently, or recreation appointment therapy, or starting to walk. So again, it all depends on their needs. And families being part of those appointments is as much so that the families we can model, and those families can sort of carry over those strategies at home and show their friends and families and teachers kind of what strategies work with their child as well.
Is there a typical number of visits to the Niagara Children's Center that a family would make in a given week, or is that very much dependent too on what the issues identified are?
It's very dependent on what the issues are and where that child is in the journey. So, for example, a very young child who might be referred to us sort of in that, you know, shortly after birth or infancy in those first 2 years, may be seen more frequently. So, again, depending on the needs, those children might be coming in once a week for an appointment. And again, as those needs change, it might change to kind of when they're in school, more episodic care, where there's points in time in their development when we know we need to see them because either their seating needs to be modified or their communication technology needs to be modified. So it really varies. So some children coming in for speech might, you know, a block of 6 weeks of therapy might be all that they need. And others might need to do that sort of intermittently for a year or two.
I imagine also there's a lot of research that needs to be done by the staff at the Niagara Children's Center. And I'm wondering, you know, how you do that, not only in terms of, you know, what the experts are finding are the best sorts of therapies for these sorts of identified issues, but also the technology and incorporating that. There would be a constant learning curve. Am I right with that?
You're absolutely right. So even within the field, you know, the professionals that we draw into these roles, you know, they're trained as physiotherapists, and their training includes, you know, supporting adults as well as children, sort of if you think about their educational program. So pediatrics is very much a specialized area in itself, in a niche area. So there's lots of, when new staff are hired, if they haven't worked with children and youth, there, you know, that there's a learning in that orientation period in the mentorship, but professional development is ongoing. So there's lots of sort of online opportunities now, which help. We're part of a network across the province, so there's lots of sharing of information that happens through communities of practice, but also in terms of, you know, conferences and those pieces. So absolutely, we have to invest and allow time for our staff for professional development so that the practices are continuously evolving.
And who is everybody involved in the, this is what I read something the other day that said that this is coming up, this new technology is available, or they're getting a lot of success with these types of issues, with this type of treatment. Is that sort of a group thing, or do you have people actually working on that?
So it's a bit of a group thing. I mean, we certainly have lots of opportunities for that organic learning and sharing that happens in our center. Definitely, we're so grateful to be back together on site after the pandemic, because it's those spontaneous opportunities that really help, particularly with newer employees coming on board, that they can see or hear or observe other therapists doing things. So that certainly is one of those pieces. But we've recently created a position called a clinical practice facilitator that will sort of invest time in you know, understanding current practices, developing and redesigning programs, and working with the team to shape that. So we are continuously evolving, you know, continuous improvement, continuous development, and always trying to figure out how else might we deliver services, particularly because we have such significant wait lists. So, you know, trying to figure out how can we get, be most efficient with our services, but how else can we reach more families, because we really don't want them to wait.
Do you offer any programming offsite?
We do. So A few exciting developments this year is that we have partnered with the YMCA of West Niagara, so their location in Grimsby, as well as I think it's Niagara Centre, which is based on the Niagara College campus there. So we have now two new satellite locations to, again, improve access to services for families who are in those communities. So some families are actually attending their appointments at those locations versus needing to travel to our site. But we have a significant program that is offering services to children in their school and in their classroom settings. So we've got a team of about 20 who are on the road all day, going from school to school to make sure that those children's environments are conducive to learning and education. We are in childcare centers. We have a great partnership with the Region of Niagara around early on programs right now. Again, helping our families transition into those community settings and supporting staff, childcare providers, teachers who are working with our children to how best to support them. So definitely there's a significant group of staff who are not in our building, but there are, again, families who are coming in for the kind of more traditional appointments here.
Tell me how, I'm reading a book right now where this woman has a child who's almost two and is nonverbal and hasn't spoken at all. And, I was reading it last night and I was thinking about this interview coming up with you and thinking that, well, if they were in Niagara, I guess they could, you know, maybe seek out some help from the Niagara Children's Center. How would that process work? How does that work? Do parents come to you? Do teachers come to you? Like, how does it all happen?
Yeah. So in the ideal, that family is being seen by their family physician for well baby checkups. So usually at those appointments, the doctors have some standard set of questions that they're kind of reviewing with the family. And if, at age one, often sort of communication, is your child responding or vocalizing or those pieces. But somewhere along the way, it could be a parent who's saying, I'm concerned about my child. They're not developing as much as my, other two children did. Or a physician might flag, a child care provider might flag. So anybody who has eyes on the children might say, it might be worth talking to Niagara Children's Center to have things checked out. The beauty about our center is we do not require a physician's referral. So, and that can be a big barrier to many families when that's required. So, this year, we became what's referred to as a Smart Start Hub. So it's to help families figure out where they need to be in the system and how to get services. So families just need to phone us, or it could be a formal referral from a physician. Our next step is our intake workers will schedule a telephone interview with the family, collect more information, understand kind of where some of the needs are arising, which could then lead to an assessment appointment at our center. Or if in the case as you described, if the child is nonverbal, they would definitely, we would be seeing that as a child who does need to be seen and assessed. So the first stop is probably with our speech language pathologist for a screening. And to better understand what might be contributing to that. Children who are nonverbal, that could be symptomatic of a number of different presentations. So it could be a delay, or it could be part of, not to suggest all children who are nonverbal, but certainly it could be indicative of a child who might be on the autism spectrum. Just so different, those pieces. So that is very much, if there's a red flag by somebody, we want families to connect with us as soon as possible so that we can figure out how to support them.
You mentioned a waiting list. Is there a waiting list for that assessment or that initial conversation, or does the waiting list occur when you're trying to stream somebody, a child in for services?
The waiting list doesn't happen at the front end. So our goal is that dialogue with the families happen as soon as possible. And even at that, we then say this is kind of where we direct suggest you go in the pathway. Then, unfortunately, there is a wait, and it will depend on the presentation of the child. But at the same time, those intake workers are connecting families with information and resources. So depending on what was discussed in that intake interview, our intake workers might be actually sending some webinars or some video clips or some tips and strategies to those families, sort of so that they have something to look at or to read or to hear about. And the front end there is something that we're really working on now. What can we offer to families while we're waiting? So that's actually part of our strategic, one of our strategic priorities is how do we strengthen the front door of our center, because we can't see everybody, because we don't have the resources for that. But what can we do to start providing support to families and those kids sooner?
You talked about, you know, the family. You've been talking all along about how important the family is in all of this too. And are there things that you offer to parents, you know, without the child, in terms of you talk about social services a bit, but I imagine that people need a lot of support through this journey.
Yes.
And even though the programming is directed at the child, there has to be information available for the parents as well.
Absolutely. And we view our clients as the child and family together. So that, again, that family-centered care philosophy. And again, this is an area that I'm really excited about. We've continued to develop in the past 5 years with input from families and families advisors. So we have a number of exciting initiatives that came about because families were saying, we love what you're doing with our children, but can you give us a bit more support? So as an example, a really sort of new initiative is what we've called our peer mentorship program. So we have families who have been on the journey for a little while. They have volunteered to be mentors to other families. Those families are then trained by our family engagement facilitator to kind of what is their role, how can they support, and when do they need to, you know, make sure that a professional is involved. And then there's a matching process. So we also have families who have been identified that they're interested in having a mentor. So we've got mentees and we've got mentors, and they're matched based on kind of mutual interests. And that becomes kind of another parallel type of support that those families are going through. So we have some incredible stories of how that has been meaningful to a new family coming into the system, really scared, wondering what the future holds for themselves and for their child, and connecting kind of on what becomes mutually agreeable with that mentor, whether they meet for coffee or whether they're going for a walk together, or whether they're just communicating by email or what have you, that support. And we're really, really pleased with that initiative, because families say, I also want to talk to another family who's been in this journey ahead of me.
I can imagine that, because at the moment where this is happening, you're feeling all alone and you're wondering what is going to happen, and
right,
you're not sure how you're going to be able to navigate through it all. And hearing from somebody else would be quite impactful. And it brings me to talking too about your volunteers. So the families, it sounds like the families that are taking part in the services that you offer at Niagara Children's Center also then perhaps become volunteers. Do you have other areas for volunteers?
We do. So families are a big part of our volunteer group. So some of our families offer and volunteer to be ambassadors. So during our upcoming Help Kids Shine campaign, I think we've got about 16 family ambassadors where they are, as volunteers, sharing their story. So whether it's on Bell Media over the next month with radio interviews at events, fundraisers, or even talking to students, medical students, kind of what's it like for families. So we've got those family ambassadors. We have family advisors who are sort of providing us advice on programs. But then we have a group of volunteers who are supporting our program. So in this past year, we had about 15 volunteers who were working with some of the different group programs that we offer, some of our swim programs, some of our movement groups, some of our communication groups, some of our work in our early on centers. We're involving volunteers. So these are often students from Brock or Niagara College who have an interest in moving into careers with children with special needs. So again, a really important sort of set of hands. We're about to start our Challenge JACE Care Challenger baseball program again. So that's a program that relies on volunteers so that parents can sit back in their chairs on the sidelines and just be parents cheering on their kids. And we have sort of, and we pair volunteers up to kind of help the children in an adaptive way, sort of play the game of baseball, as just as an example.
Oh, fun. And are you able to do that on site, or do you, is there, do you go to another ballpark?
We go to ballparks. I don't know the exact one where we go, but we do. So we're actually in a recruitment mode for community members who wish to volunteer with the Challenger Baseball. And then we have a whole army of volunteers who help us around different fundraising events and activities. So we have a big event in the fall called the Superhero Run. It draws around 200 volunteers just to run that event. So again, we've had great support from different clubs and sport teams at Brock University, community members. So again, we have volunteers helping us in many different ways. Could be, you know, last year we had an army of volunteers helping decorate smile cookies because we were one of the beneficiaries. So, and then of course our board members are volunteers who are involved in sort of at a more sort of policy and guidance perspective. So our volunteers are valuable and we're so happy that we could bring them back in because during the pandemic, we couldn't operate our programs with volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the pandemic had a really huge impact on the development of many of the children and the families that you serve. So it's nice that you can be back and doing that. And I know that, you know, this is a big month coming up for you because you've got the Help Kids Shine campaign coming up. So tell our listeners where they can get more information and if they want to donate, what it is that that they can do.
So our annual, our big campaign in the year for fundraising and public awareness is called our Help Kids Shine campaign. So members can go on to helpkidsshine.ca. Read stories about different ambassadors, understand the work we do, and you can make a donation right online if you wish to support that. And just spread the word about what we're also doing at Niagara Children's Center. So, you know, if you read a story and you go, I didn't know that Niagara Children's Center did that, share that information with other people that you think could benefit from that as well. But it's definitely a fundraising campaign. And we're really hoping that we can build our monthly donors this year as well. So I think a $19 donation makes you part of the Help Kids Shine Club per month. And that can be done really, really easily. So again, we have tremendous support from the community during that campaign. And that just helps us serve more kids and families.
Perfect. So anybody out there listening, hop on the website and find out more. It's a very cool history that you've got too, and you know, deeply rooted in our community, very grassroots. Oksana, I appreciate the time you've given us today to tell us about the Niagara Children's Center. And thanks everybody for listening to Niagara Made right here on 610 CKTV.
This has been Niagara Made, a show highlighting businesses in the Niagara area. For more information and past shows, visit our website, 610ckTV.com.